session number 10963, Reel 1.
Mr. Dyer, Reel 1, can you tell me, first of all, something about where you were born and your family background, please?
Yes, I was born in Filey, Yorkshire.
What did your father do for a living?
My father was a farmer at Peterborough, just outside Peterborough.
Did you go to school in Filey?
Yes.
How old were you when you left school?
14.
To do what?
Oh, I had a job in a fruit shop, delivering orders.
What were you doing when war was declared?
I was playing football for Scarborough.
Professionally?
Yes.
So was your full time job?
I was part time at Scarborough. I was doing a bit of gardening for the directors to make the money up, the wage. I was actually on the way down from football, and then I'd been to Bradford Park Avenue. Where else was I? Then I went to Scarborough, from Scarborough to Peterborough, and Peterborough to Grantham. I finished at Grantham.
So you played for all those teams?
Yep. Oh, and Torquay first. I'm sorry, I missed Torquay. I played at Torquay.
In what position?
Well, I played every position there was. I was an inside forward for a start. For Farley Town, that was.
What was your reaction when you heard that we were at war with Germany?
Well, we all said, at Scarborough, we all said we'd join up. But we went to see about joining up, and I asked to go in the Navy. And they said, no, there's enough in the Navy, they wanted them in the Army. So I said, well, I'll wait until they called me up. And then eventually they called me up and they said, what would you like to be in? And I said, the Navy, and I went straight in.
Which year was that?
Yeah, it would be 40, 41, I think.
You put that 1940, you were at HMS Westminster.
It must have been 40 then. Mm-hmm.
At Rosyth.
Yeah, that's. I joined the Navy and did my training at Devonport.
What was that like?
The training. But, well, pretty good, yes. Just initial things for seamanship and all that, you know.
How were you treated?
Oh, quite well. Quite good. Yes, no trouble at all there.
And so your first ship was the Westminster?
The Westminster, yes.
What kind of a ship was that?
A destroyer, V&W.
Can you describe what it was like?
Well, it had twin four-inch guns, Oerlikons, depthiages. I don't know what capacity it was. It's gone now. I forgot about that. She was in Portsmouth. I picked her up in Portsmouth, which she'd been to Dunkirk and come back from Dunkirk and had a bump and was being repaired in Portsmouth. And then where did we go from there?
So that was the summer of 1940.
Yes, that's right. Mm.
You weren't at Dunkirk yourself?
I wasn't at Dunkirk, no.
Was she a comfortable ship to live on?
Yes, very nice. Nice large ship, good. These old V&Ws. The crew was a bit pushed for space. I was sleeping on the capstan for a while, the steam capstan, because there was no billets for iron your hammocks until somebody moved, and then I moved into their position.
Where did you move to on the ship?
Just in the same place, but I got in a space for swinging my hammock.
Whereabouts on the ship was this?
Four on the foredeck. Well, four capstan and just there.
How did you find sleeping in a hammock?
Oh, quite good and enjoyable. Slept well.
Did you suffer from seasickness?
Yes. I'm afraid so.
Was there anything you could do to avoid it?
Not really, no. I wasn't really bad, and I had that nausea feeling all the time, you know, just sometimes I was sick if it got really rough, but that was all right. No trouble.
Didn't stop you doing your job?
No, I was a hazard decorating, by the way. Submarine detective.
What did that involve?
On the bridge where we used to send echoes out listening for submarines. Or we did a listening watch for E-boats. That was when we were on the East Coast convoys from Rosyth to Sheerness.
So you were sat at a desk?
And in a little hut on the bridge. On the bridge, where the captain was there and the lookout, so whoever was on in charge. And we were doing a sweep with the Asdics.
What was the machinery like that you operated?
It was very good. Yes.
What did it look like?
It gave an echo. It was just a little, like a compass. And the skipper would say, sweep from straight ahead, or sweep from 10 degrees port, 10 degrees starboard. And you had to keep sweeping that, you see. And if you got an echo, you reported it to the bridge, and he said, what is it? And if you said, well, maybe a wreck, sir, well, we'll just investigate. And they used to investigate it and then decide what it was. But we didn't get any contacts with submarines up the East Coast, mostly E-boats.
How did you sweep? What exactly did you have to do?
You had a little arm on the thing, and they just moved it in, I think it was about 3 or 4 degrees at a time, and let it, an echo went out. And if it did anything, it just pinged.
So you had headphones on?
Yeah, headphones on, yes. Mm.
How did you know whether it was a wreck or not?
Well, you took a bearing on it, and, you know, from one end to the other, and get the degrees of it. And if it was, and then you decided whether it was moving, it was still. I mean, it could keep still and be a submarine, but if it was never moved and it kept there in that position all the time, it was a wreck. Which there were plenty of that coast.
But if it was a submarine that was just keeping still, mm-hmm. was there any way of distinguishing that from a wreck?
Well, you could tell by the ping sometimes, what it, the echo, you know.
The sound?
That came with the sound of it, yes. That came off and it gave you a peculiar ring of it. Not like a wreck would probably be dead. And you just had to investigate. Sometimes they'd go and drop a depth yard just to make sure, it, you know, to try and move it. But we didn't do much on submarines up the coast. The worst part was the E-boats coming in on the... where was it? Alba, just off Alba. As you turned into the estuary, Thames Estuary, they used to be waiting for us there. And when we got down there, we had a listening watch, which we could hear the engines. You could hear the engines, you know, and then you knew it was coming.
Were you attacked by any boat?
Oh, we weren't particularly attacked. The convoy was. They used to sink two or three every time we went down. We did have one near miss once, which was he fired a torpedo. It just went out past our stern. We looked out and saw it going past. I was on lookout then, I wasn't in the Asdics.
So you saw the torpedo?
You saw it going past, yes. The skipper altered course and it just went past, missed the stern.
So presumably the E-boats were a lot faster than a
They were, oh yes, much faster. Mm.
Did you ever fire on any E-boats?
Oh, they fired on them two or three times. But you couldn't. It was night, they always attacked at night, you see. You couldn't see them. And they were in and gone before you... You know, you could see them. All you got was this what do you call it? I forget the name of it now. From the engines. High-powered engine coming towards you. You knew what it was, you see. Because the old tramp steamers and all these what we were conveying down, they were just a chug, chug, chug. You know, you knew them. That was the difference in the noise. It's quite...
So you didn't hit any boat?
Well, you can't tell, really. You couldn't tell whether you'd hit them or not. You used to fire at them and hope for the best in the dark. You fired up a star shell, and by the time the star shell started to come down, the E-boat had gone. They were too fast. It caused a bit of trouble there. It caused a lot of sinking of ships there.
Did you have air attacks on the East Coast convoy?
Yes, we had quite a few. We used to fire at the planes. I think we brought one down once, but you couldn't get a confirm on it because it was smoking and going away, you know.
Would you have a fighter escort from the RAF?
We used to have, not a fighter, Blenheims used to come out doing an escort.
Were they of much use in defending you?
Well, they did do. They kept away. When the aircraft came and saw the Blenheims going around the thing, they kept away a bit, you see. But we used to get attacked quite a bit with bombing up the East Coast.
Was there any place which was where you were more liable to get air attacks than others?
Yes, we didn't get many air attacks until we got past Clambride and the Humber. That's where we got most of it. And the E-boats were the same when we got further down to, I think it was Alborough. We were off Alborough, turning into the estuary.
Were mines a problem on the
Quite
East
a lot
Coast?
Of mines, yes. Quite a lot of mines on the East Coast. And the Forth. When we were returning with a convoy, we used to leave them at a place called Methil. That was just outside. And then we used to proceed up to Rosyth. But they used to mine the estuary up to Rosyth. All sorts of mines are put in there. We never picked one up, but there was a few boats there, were it, one destroyers, going back in. And they used to be sweeping all the time.
Which was the worst, the mines, the planes, or the E-boats?
I think the E-boats were. Because you couldn't see them, you didn't know where they were coming from. They just let go and there's some quite a few merchant ships.
Did you like being aboard the Westminster?
I did, yes. Yes. There were good officers on there and they used to look after you. We had one, I don't know whether you want to know this,
yes.
But we had one, a lieutenant there, I forget his name, he had a big beard, you know, real bluff. We had a good football team on the Westminster. And every time we went into the harbour, he'd say, Dyer, who's in here today? He'd say, oh, KJ5's there, he says, we'll challenge them this. We'll have a bottle of whiskey on with them. He was a devil. Yeah. And we did very well. Yeah, he was always organising sports for us, and it was very good. I forget the name of the skipper. That was a Captain Overy, but he was a different type of chap. He wasn't that, you know. He was an officer, and he was officer of the boat, and that was it.
You mean more remote?
Yes. Mm.
Were they mostly hostilities only, or regulars, or what?
Wasn't many regulars on it. They were mostly hostilities. They were from the Flying Fox at Bristol. They were most of our crew Bristol boys.
What's the Flying Fox?
She was one of these what do you call them, where they were taught seamanship, not before the war, you know,
training,
and all.
Ship.
Training ship, yes, nothing to do with the Navy then, but they were, that's where they all came from.
How long were you with the Westminster?
Now you've got me.
Was it months?
I think it must have been about a year, roughly. And then they asked for volunteers for MLs. And this is the funny part. My wife was living down here and somebody told me that they built the MLs at Brixham. So I thought, get to Brixham. Where was I sent to? Campbelltown in Scotland for training. They sent me up there for training for until the boat was ready, and then I picked the boat up at Brightlingsea in Essex, 457
ML 457.
Yeah.
Can you describe what she was like?
Well, she's just an ordinary motor launch. Imagine she must have been something like the E-boats, not quite as fast. All wood, I think it was all wood, more or less.
What was the armament of a motor launch?
Harlequins and Twin Lewis. And of course, depth charges, a few depth charges.
So they weren't armed with torpedoes?
No, no torpedoes, no.
How big a crew would they have?
Let's think. We had a chief engineer and a stoker, captain, lieutenant, coxswain, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, about 9 or 10, roughly.
And what was your job about?
I was on ASDIC as well. ASDIC rating, you know, the same. But I was on there by myself. When I was on the destroyer, there was a HSD on there, I had a submarine detector. He was in charge of the lot. But on this one, I had the ASDIC to myself.
You were an ASD? What does ASD mean?
Anti-submarine detector. Mm.
And so the other one was called an
HSD? HSD. He was the boss over there. There was two SDs, what we call SDs, and the HSD. We used to take turns on the shifts.
Was the equipment for ASDIC the same on the motor launch as it was on the...
Yes, the same thing. Earphones and the...
And what about your accommodation on board?
That's quite good. We had bunks on there. We all had a bunk each on the MLs. The coxswain had his own cabin. Of course, the skipper and the lieutenant were down aft. Good accommodation. It's quite good in there.
So, which did you prefer to be on the destroyer or the motor launch?
Well, the motor launch, I wasn't on it very long, you see. I enjoyed it on the destroyer. We had good comradeship on the destroyer. Very good on there. But the ML was quite good. I picked it up at Brightland Sea, and we went from Brightland Sea to, after she was, I think she was just commissioned there, we went down to, we stopped at Brighton for a night. No, Dover first, then Brighton, then we stopped at Weymouth for the night, and then we went on to Dartmouth and on to Falmouth.
Was this for San Jose raid?
Yeah, well, we didn't know then, we just thought we were going to be stationed at Falmouth.
Did they give you any briefing before the San Nazaire raid?
Well, yes. We went to... There was a boat came in with our commandos on, and officers, office commandos, and the skipper and the lieutenant were going across to this boat, and I went with them to the boat.
What kind of boat?
A commando boat, a big one. What they got all these... everything on there. And that's where we got to know where we were. We didn't know where we were going, but they showed us a model of where we should attack, which was San Jose. And they showed us where we were going and what we're going to do, blow the docks up, land at the mole and cause trouble.
What was Motor Launch 457 supposed to do? What was its role in the raid?
We should have gone into the mole. There was, I think it was 6 or 7 boats should have gone into the old mole and tie up there, land our commandos. Some were demolition, some were assault parties, and then wait there, tied up until they came back. Of course, everybody was, and oh, by the way, we had petrol tanks on the upper deck fitted to give us the extra petrol to get there. And of course these things were setting, when they hit them, they set them on fire, you see. So we were the only boat that went in, and we were demolition, and we tied up by the mole and the Twin Lewis jam, by the way, as well, and nobody else came in. All we could see was boats afire in the midstream, and other boats dashing up and down which weren't afire, which were probably doing something else, and there was 2 or 3 of them missed the mole altogether and went on. Well, anyway, we tied up there and we landed, the commandos landing went up this slope to the pier, like a jetty, but in the meantime the assault party hadn't got ashore, and there was pillboxes just above us on the jetty. And they were dropping Well, first off, I said to the skipper, I said, is it shallow here, sir? He said, why? I said, we're hitting the bottom. He said, no, it's not. He says, it's hand grenades, which are coming down onto the, they were dropping hand grenades onto us. And he said, well, we'll stick here anyway. And he said to me, slip down aft into our cabin and see if the commandos have left any armaments, because the Twin Lewis was jammed. But there was nothing there. I went down and there was nothing there in the cabin. So I came back, they were still dropping these hand grenades, and one dropped right in amongst us on the bridge, and it cleared them right out. It took the captain's leg off there.
His right leg?
I thought it was right or left, I can't be certain. And it hit my Scotch boy, took his inside out, killed another one. And in the meantime, the lieutenant had got killed on the forecastle, and the gun crew forecastle were both dead. So the skipper gave orders to push off. They were pushed off midstream. Because then we got set on fire.
How?
I think it was from the land. It was a gun hit us from the land. Set us on fire. So he said, abandon ship. So we threw a raft overside. Two or three got on it. I think there was a signalman. The captain went over last. He said, go on, die. I haven't been touched, by the way. Nothing. This never touched me. And I went over the side and swam to this raft. The skipper came, the young on. The single was hanging on. The boy with his stomach wound was lying on the raft. And the tide was taking us out. And it was similar to the Thames Estuary. It was a wicked tide going out. So we were being washed out to sea, and we came above there was a boat sunk in the harbour with a mast sticking up just above the water. We caught hold of this to hang on there and tied a rope to it. Anyway, it went on, and the skipper, you could see, wasn't very good. He just let go and went under, and he left the singleman. He wasn't hurt, and he just said cheerio, and he went under. And in the meantime, the tide was going out, and if you can understand, the rope which was tied to the mast went too high and was tipping the boy into the water, so we cut it and let it go. And I don't know the chap, there was another chap with me, and I just can't place who he was. Anyway, we're stuck there till the morning, till it got daylight, and the Germans came and picked us up and took us in.
You said that another motor launch passed you without picking you up.
Yeah, well, it was dark. I couldn't see who it was. I wouldn't commit myself there. I couldn't see what it was. There was one or two went out. Then I saw the gunboat go out. She went out, and she was, you know, she was loaded pretty well from the Campbelltown. She took people off the Campbelltown, their crew.
Do you blame the motor launch for not picking you
no,
up?
No. If he'd have stopped, he would have probably got it, same as we did, because we had nothing. We were just pushed off and we caught it. No, I won't blame anyone for that.
How long were you on the raft before you were picked up?
Well, it must have been about 2 or 3 hours, I should think, because it was daylight, more or less daylight, when the boat came out, and the raid had finished and they're all gone, you know. They were just scouting around, picking what they could up.
When you say a raft, do you mean a carly float?
Carly float, yes. It wasn't very big, you know, it was off the MLs, they weren't really big.
So what condition were you in by the time you got picked up?
Cold. It was March, you see. But I had no pants on, I slung my pants off to swim. As they were catching me, you know, I just had my trunks on. And it was a bit cold. But I was all right. Nothing wrong with me.
You weren't wounded at all?
No. Only thing I had was I scrubbed my leg on the mast. Clapping the mast. It sounds horrible, doesn't it? All that there going on, and I just scrubbed my leg. But anyway, they took us ashore and put us in air raid shelter, I think it was. What they picked up. Just a few in the boat they picked up. And they put us in this air raid shelter, and anyway, we were there for quite a while, and then all of a sudden we heard the big bang. the Campbelltown had blown. And then they took us from there to an hotel and put us in this hotel. Wounded was supposed to be, you know, the wounded went in there, and there was quite a lot of badly wounded people there, and I had ideas of getting away, so I said, I'm bad leg, you know, and I went in with them, but we didn't get no chance to get away. They gave us a mattress each on the floor and just let us lie there, and somebody attended to the wounded, but we sat there a long while before anybody came to us, you know, to see them, the doctors or anything.
Was there anybody there in need of urgent treatment?
Well, you can't really tell. There was quite a lot of wounds, you know, bullet wounds and all that. Bad treatment, but you couldn't really tell because we were just herded in the place and left there, you see, just, you know.
When the Germans first picked you up, what was their attitude towards you?
Well, they didn't say anything. They never said anything. They just put us in, sit down, and that was it. There wasn't any animosity shown, I don't think, all the time we were there. But not at Sanders Air anyway.
Did anybody have any of their possessions stolen from them?
I didn't see that. No, I never saw anything like that. No.
When you first went in on the motor launch, mm-hmm. into the Loire estuary, you were carrying how many commandos?
I think it was about 10, roughly. We had 10 on, which, as I say, were demolition, most of them.
From 2 commandos, is this?
I couldn't tell you, really.
Did you?
I know there was. I went to. When we went to Sanders Air under Britannia, there was. I can't remember his name now. He came and asked me how our skipper got on. He'd been on the boat. But I can't remember his name.
Did you speak to any of the commandos on board your ML?
Oh, yes, they were mixing with it. Yeah, I spoke all right. Mm.
What kind of mood were they in? Were they tense?
Oh, they were ready. No, they were. They seemed cool enough. They knew the job, what they were going to do, and that was it. They were, you know, they were doing the weapons all the time, getting ready. Yes.
Did you learn any of their names?
No, I'm just they've gone, the names, to tell you the truth.
Did you see any of them later in prison? In German captivity?
No, because they were separated from us, you see. We were naval. We went to, as I say, a merchant navy camp, first off.
Did you have any complaints about how the Germans treated you?
No, I don't think I did. Not really.
You were saying to me that you thought that your captain ought to have got a medal.
Well, as I say, he went in. He was the only ship that went in to where he should have gone. He lost his leg. He was drowned. And I thought he should have been mentioned anyway.
What was his name?
Collier. I think he was the yachting correspondent for the Times.
C-O-L-L-I-E-R,
yes, lieutenant he was.
I think that before the raid itself, that you gave the commandos a run in the motor launch to see what it felt like.
That's right. We went from Falmouth with about 10 or 12